Skolick and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Jason Fitz. We're also on Sirius XM Channel 80. Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo, sitting with Mike Golick, Mike Golick Jr. You can follow us at Golick and Wingo on Twitter and Instagram. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the show, Penzo Performance Line. And a change coming in Washington today, as we will get an announcement from the team today that they are no longer going to sport the same name. That's change coming, but there's more change coming in the coming months.
Yeah, listen, there's much more important change coming, especially in the sports world, than my change. But I said on this day I would let everybody know, for those that, who cared. We know Golick and Wingo is ending on July 31st, and my run on morning radio at ESPN, which started back in 1998 with Tony Bruno, is ending July 21st. So it's my 22nd year of doing it. And it will be over. I would have loved to have kept going, but not in the cards right now. That's not the way it's going to be. I work for people. That's, you know, it's how it all works. And they want to go in a different direction, which is absolutely fine on their part. The choices are made. But I do have a contract through the end of the year with ESPN. And I didn't want to just sit around and do nothing. So I approached them about, hey, can I go back and do what I first did when I got here? Started working for ESPN in 1995, and that was college football games. So if there is college football games, I'm going to go back and do college football games. I started doing that in 95 and then started doing the first NFL show. Was it not NFL Live then? It was NFL Tonight. Me and Mark Malone, Sean Salisbury, Merrill Hodge.
Leather jackets.
Yeah, yeah. We started that show in the 90s after that. And then started the morning radio with Tony, and then kept doing college games and all those other things until 2005, before my oldest, who was Mike sitting right here doing the show with me, went to high school. And I told ESPN I wanted to stop doing college games while my kids played, and so I could see them play in their events on the weekends. And so that's been a while. Since 2005, I've did a few college games here and there. Mike, you and I have done a few, and that's been a ball, by the way. So I've always loved that, so I'm going to get back to it. I'll do some appearances on SportsCenter talking college football, NFL, some college football live stuff. But I wanted to keep doing something, and then at the end of the year, we'll see. Maybe I'll keep doing it here. If they choose not, then it'll be somewhere else. But I'm too young to walk away, that's for sure. So I look forward to college football. I did it with so many different people as well, from, you know, when Dave Barnett and Bill Curry and I did it, and with Sean McDonough, I've done it with Mark Jones, I've done it with, and I saw, because Shefty tweeted it before, that I'm going to be doing games. I actually worked a game in 98 with Steve Levy. It was his very first game as a play-by-play guy. We did a game in Illinois, and that was great. He did a great job, and he said I wasn't very, you know, he was being self-deprecating, but obviously he's going on to do an incredible job.
Who has gone on to parlay that into being the voice of the Bahamas Bowl every year. Yeah. Like, but if anyone has worked the system well, it has been Steve.
His career has been incredible. I'd like to take credit for it, but I certainly can't. But there's a nice note by Steve in there. But I'm looking forward to doing that. So that's what I'm going to be doing throughout this year if we have college football. And I hope we do, and I hope to be doing that going forward. And real quick, I would just love to thank everybody from my peers out there in the business, to all the listeners out there, for the really, really nice tweets that have been going out. I've really, really appreciated, very humbled by all of that. Been doing this a long time and got to talk to a lot of people, and to hear the feedback from either people I've worked with or people that have listened or watched the show has really been a humbling experience, and I really do appreciate it. But I'm not going away completely, so you'll still hear me.
I was gonna say, though, it felt like a Twitter eulogy. You were still very much alive.
It really did.
I mean, I gotta say, people sent flowers and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I was like,
"Are you?"
I said, "You're not allowed to tweet anymore because by Twitter standards, you are now dead."
Not stunningly, Bill and his wife Carolyn sent flowers.
Yeah, shout out to Bill Curry for causing my mom to just spontaneously burst into tears into our kitchen. It was like watching someone eat a hot pepper. You saw the physical reaction, and then the eyes immediately water there on account of the sweetness of the curries.
Bill and Carolyn, wow, unbelievable.
And shout out to Schefter for pulling off breaking that news during the segment with us, I believe, as we were talking to Schefter about everything that's coming up with the NFL news, and we've got the statement from Washington that we'll get to in a second here, but Schefter managing to break that news mid-interview with us is a skill that very few besides him have.
That's why he's Schefter.
That's exactly right.
There's a moment here. Like, you give him a nugget of news, he's going to take it to
Twitter.
He's
going to run with it. So.
I did not realize, to your point, until I tweeted something complimentary to you in response to all of this. And then I started getting all of these tweets and people saying, oh, my God, what happened to Mike? I didn't realize that's where we are on Twitter now. Like the minute you tweet something like,
well, it's like when Betty White trends every time. Oh, you just assume the worst.
You pray. Oh,
it's terrible.
You close Twitter and ugly cry.
But I look forward to it. And I know I've left out names of other play by play. And I apologize. I just want to throw a few because I wanted to get Steve in there because it was his first game. But I love doing college. So, again, I hope there's college. So that's some change going on, at least with my life and where I'm going. But there's obviously a lot bigger things going on as far as change in the world, no doubt about it.
Well, and for sure, Skolik and Wingo, ESPN Radio, Jason Fitz in for Trey, sitting with Mike Golic Jr. We do have a statement. This is breaking. We have a statement from the Washington football team. The statement says, quote, on July 3rd, we announced the commencement of a thorough review of the team's name. That review has begun in earnest. As part of this process, we want to keep our sponsors, fans, and community apprised of our thinking as we go forward. Today, we are announcing we will be retiring the Redskins' name and logo upon completion of this review. Dan Snyder and Coach Rivera are working closely to develop a new name and design approach that will enhance the standing of our proud, tradition-rich franchise and inspire our sponsors, fans, and community for the next 100 years. That's the statement directly. And again, as people have been reminding me on social media, rightfully so, obviously I used the team name in that process of referencing the team because they used it in the statement. So there's only so much I can do to get around it. I am trying to break that.
Which is also interesting, though, that they would, in a statement about no longer using the team name, still use the name in that way when the rest of the world is kind of going, all right, we'll use the placeholder of Washington football team for the meantime there, but no one's ever accused the NFL or its some of its parts of necessarily being PR wizards in a lot of this. But I got to say, like this weekend, I was actually, before we heard any of the rumblings of this announcement, because it happened sort of later in the day yesterday, I've been sitting around wondering, man, this review process has taken a while. What exactly is happening here? And I understand there are all the things that go along with trademark law and choosing a new name and all this, but I'm like, this seems to be taking kind of a long time. And so maybe they were feeling the outside world sort of angst with that and went to answer this question. But we had the big wonder of why, because you were starting to hear rumblings out of local media there that there was more news surrounding the team that might be coming today that may be less than stellar. And was this a situation to kind of help mask that? And so my antennas are still kind of up with that. But knowing my response, maybe the team was trying to be transparent in this process to prevent others from feeling that way.
By the way, they'll also need to do a change of address. The address on the statement is there. I mean, the current street address is Redskin Park Drive. So they're going to have to figure out a way to even change street names when you talk about the complications of a name change.
And then there are complications of it. So we're wondering about the timing of it. We had Jason Reed from The Undefeated on just a little while ago. And interesting when he says this all thing is going to be buttoned up by. That's what he said.
And let me tell you something else, just getting off the phone with some other people around the league. What I'm being told is that the expectation is that before training camp, before Washington's NFL franchise goes to training camp, this issue will be resolved. Multiple sources have told me that this morning, because Roger doesn't want this lingering. He doesn't want this being another talking point with everything else going on. As you guys know, as you guys were just talking about, this COVID situation is going to take up a lot of space, rightfully so. So the league doesn't want this naming situation to carry on.
So here's the funny thing, a thorough review. Like, what does that look like? If you're Dan Snyder and you've had this name for this many years and you've fought this, you've fought this issue for this many years. I mean, it feels like the thorough review is one phone call, right? Like the owners call you, the rest of the owners call you on a conference call and say, hey, this is bad business and we think you should change the name even if you don't. Like, I can't really figure out what the next step in a thorough review is other than calling the people that you've already been saying you won't listen to and now listening to them suddenly, which doesn't seem like it makes a lot of sense.
Maybe some journaling in there. You talk to a medium. You know, you consult a number of other experts on this stuff. I can't claim to know the personal habits of one Daniel Snyder.
Like other things that have changed, this has been talked about before, but never with enough steam to change it, even to the point where Dan Snyder 7 years ago said he will never change the name. That's why we're always careful when we say the word never. Because now he is going to change the name because momentum builds and then it loses steam in some things and you keep the norm. Well, momentum has built so much over the last few months with things going on around us that change is happening in places. So this built enough momentum, enough to the point where three of the owners who own 40% of the Washington franchise are selling, which brings to me up another question. Boy, is it worth jumping in and buying, because the NFL is a lucrative business? That's a discussion for another day. But so all these years of him saying the name will never change, so now in a matter of weeks, he has to decide not only that he's going to change the name, but what is the new name going to be? Is it already going to be an old name used in the NFL that is already trademarked to make the process easier? Is it going to be a complete brand new name? Is it going to be, as you said, Mike, go the easy route and do an animal? You know,
Jason brought this up. We have Bulldogs represented on every level of football but the NFL. Changes now.
And if someone correct me if I'm wrong, it used to be the old Canton Bulldogs.
Well, and the Cleveland Browns are associated with the dog pound, with that. But I'm talking about it as an official helmet decal mascot, tried and true.
So, but I thought it interesting there, and Jason just saying, not just have a name by then, but have it all buttoned up to where you have a logo in time for the season, you know, everything, because that's what you wonder. Because they can do the easy thing if they don't have it in time, is you take the logo off the helmet right now and take the word Redskins, which is right under the V and on the thing, off, because they said they want to keep the colors the same. So you can make it blank and easily go on and play because you're keeping the colors the same. But if by then they're all ready to replace it with all the new stuff, that would be interesting.
I'm wondering if it's just like you said, being able to make those easy cosmetic changes by then, and then have the plan in place for the rest of it,
right,
where we're not going to be sending out any more of that stuff into the public. But as far as some of the more difficult things to change legally, here's exactly what we're going to do. Here's when we're going to do it,
right,
knowing full well we at the very least won't be going out with that imaging as a part of our organization for this season.
For the love of God, just don't give us a terrible, like, take your time with the logo, because Twitter hates every logo
fan
base hates change anyway.
I'm going to say, man, you saw what happened to the Rams and the Falcons and all these jerseys and logo changes, man.
Take your time. Yeah. Get it right. Go Look and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Another big thing over the course of the weekend, at least for me, was Fight Island, which we all know how obsessed I was just with the term. Well, to me, the night of fights, or early morning of fights, I should say, lived up to all of the hype. But let's get a little expertise on it. We'll head over to the Shell Penzo Performance Center, where we're joined by Ariel Helwani of the Ariel Helwani MMA Show. Ariel, thank you so much for your time. I saw you tweeting as it went down, but, you know, there was so much hype for what we expected out of Usman Masvidal. Did it live up to the hype in your mind?
Well, first of all, guys, thank you for having me again. Hope you're doing well on this Monday. I think it lived up to what I thought it was going to be, which is to say Masvidal taking this fight on 6 days' notice and having to cut all that much weight, 22 pounds in a matter of 5 days, was going to take a toll on him. And if you watch the first round, which I thought he won, by the way, it looked like he was kind of swinging for the fences because he knew that he would gas out as the fight went on. Usman's a really tough guy and a great wrestler, and that can make you really tired. And it seemed like post first round, second, third, and then as the fight went on, he was just, you know, he was just spent. So there was a part of me as I was watching this thinking to myself, like, okay, this was fun. This was great. All credit to Usman. He's the champ. He's still undefeated in the UFC. But, man, I wish we could have seen that fight, you know, with Masvidal getting a full training camp and not getting tired, because he's not that kind of guy. But when you consider everything he's been through over the past week, it was inevitable that at some point in that fight he would get tired.
Usman with 5 takedowns in that fight, 17-1 overall, 12-0 in the UFC. Now, with Masvidal, if he'd have won this, we already know the kind of star power that he can have. He is so out there and engaging and all that, and maybe too much sometimes, but we knew that potential of stardom that was budding there. What about Usman? He's the champ. What is their potential there as far as this star power to help carry the sport?
So obviously he's not on the level of a Jorge Masvidal. I actually was looking at our ESPN MMA YouTube channel, and I think the Masvidal post-fight interview has well over 1 million views, and the Usman one has like 250,000 views, and I think that says a lot. Masvidal obviously has been in the game a lot longer. This is his 17th year, but he has been able to connect with the audience in a very special way. They feel like he's authentic. They feel like he represents, you know, his town, the 305, the state of Florida. Cuban people love him as well. Usman has had a hard time connecting with the people like that, and I think sometimes people feel like he tries a little too hard in interviews, and, you know, when he's doing media stuff or in front of the crowd, walking to the cage and all that, he just has to be himself. And the other issue is his style isn't the most fan friendly. In my opinion, I feel like this is mixed martial arts. I hate when fans or media criticize fighters for doing what they do best. You're allowed to take people down. That's part of the game. If you don't like it, go watch kickboxing. Go watch boxing. So he is a great wrestler. It would be foolish for him to not use his wrestling. But on the flip side, you had this sentiment on Saturday where people were like, oh, you robbed us of fun because we all wanted to see Jorge Masvidal knock someone out or get involved in a striking battle and all this stuff. And we didn't see that. So people were kind of down on Usman, and I feel like he almost had to apologize afterwards. He has nothing to apologize for. In this game, you make a lot of money when you're the champion, and when you lose that belt, you go all the way to the bottom of the ladder and you make less money. So for him and his family, he has to do what's best, and he can't worry about getting into a striking battle, because guess what we'd be saying today if he did that? How dumb was Kamaru Usman for striking and standing there and not using his wrestling with Jorge Masvidal? So he's got a ways to go. There's no doubt about it. He's certainly not one of the more popular fighters in the UFC because of his style, but I don't think he should apologize, and I think he should just keep doing his thing, because eventually you keep racking up those wins, the paychecks will increase.
Ariel Helwani with us here on Golden Wingo. Imagine telling someone else who's going with the threat of getting their face punched how to defend their face. What a ludicrous concept for anyone to criticize in that one. Ariel, I'm curious, though, as someone who lives and breathes the sport, were you getting a good laugh out of the rest of Twitter and the world discovering the foot stomping portion was legal in MMA?
Well, I have to say, it's like, you know, we have these moments in the sport, and they come maybe like twice a year, three times if we're lucky, when I'll take us, you know, Saturday night when there's a big pay-per-view, we're so locked in and there's so much going on, there's so many fights and they come fast and furious. But when I take a step back sometimes and I look at Twitter and I see, you know, Damian Lillard tweeting about it and, you know, multiple ESPN personalities such as yourself, Mike Jr., and I'm like, wow, people care about our little sport. This is nice. It feels good to be accepted. And so I get a kick out of it. I don't get upset about those things. You know, there's a lot of people that treat MMA like that band that, you know, they watched growing up. Jason, I know you know what I'm talking about, that band, that underground band that everyone's like, that was my band. And then they make it to MSG and everyone's like, you sold out, you sold out. I don't feel that way at all. Like, I love it. And I think it's funny when people are criticizing the maybe not so exciting aspects of the sport. But make no mistake about it, what Usman did was 100% legal, and it was a good game plan. They're clinched up there. Yeah, okay, you can't really do much. Your arms are tied up. Stomp his feet. Why not? I mean, Conor want to fight, you know, hitting a guy with his shoulder. There's no one, there's nowhere in the rules that say you can't do that stuff, and that's the fun part. You have to adapt and overcome. So, yeah, it was funny, but I wasn't all up in arms, offended. You know, a lot of my colleagues will retweet stuff like that and be like, oh, look at these people, they don't know MMA. Nah, man, for me, it's like everyone jump on board. This is a really fun sport, and when you have moments like Saturday night where you get these two characters who hate each other and it captivates the sporting world, and especially we're lucky right now because there's not a lot of competition, I think it's great. It warms my heart.
I'm talking to Ariel Helwani. You can check out the Ariel Helwani MMA show, and yeah, I'll never understand why fans want their favorite band not to make as much money as possible. But you mentioned the rules, so I got to get your thoughts, because the end of the Aldo fight was tough for me to watch as he just laid there and took a beating and the ref let it go. What was your reaction to the way that fight ended particularly?
Oh, that was horrible. That was the worst part of the entire night. Not the the Max Holloway, Alexander Volkanovski situation, you know, where a lot of people thought Holloway, including myself, won. That was the worst, because that's the kind of thing that will affect Jose Aldo for the rest of his life. There was no need for that fight to go on. You know, in my opinion, it probably went on 2 minutes too long, maybe even more, and especially the final minute where the guy is – look, these fighters have a lot of pride, right? And no one wants to tap due to strikes, because unfortunately in our sport, you're viewed as a coward if you do that, which I think is ludicrous, especially for a guy like Jose Aldo. Like, that guy has nothing to prove to anyone. But he was turtled up. He was not intelligently defending himself. He was doing nothing to defend himself. He was basically telling his team and the referee, hey guys, I want out of here, because he's turtled up. He's not doing anything. And meanwhile, Jan is hitting him with a lot of shots, and this was one of those cases where, because there was no audience, I feel like you can feel and hear those shots a lot more. And it was uncomfortable. There was nothing that was going to happen that was going to change the outcome of that fight. And I know what the referee, Leon Roberts, who is typically a pretty good referee from the UK, was doing there. He was giving Aldo respect. He was giving a legend who was probably fighting in his last title fight the opportunity to reverse course. But come on. That could have been your first fight that you ever watched, and you knew that the guy was done. He just didn't want to tap due to strikes. Because you could tap – like, people think you could just tap from a submission. You could tap due to strikes, and the fight will be over, but no one wants that. Like, that's one of those moments where people will make fun of you for the rest of your career, and it's really not right. George St. Pierre did it once against Matt Serra in 2006, and people made fun of him forever for that, and I think that's crazy. You're getting beat up? All right, that's it. Live to fight another day. So, yeah, that was very uncomfortable, and again, it's one of those things in the sport. The refereeing is so subjective. There's no clear guidelines when you should stop a fight, much like the judging is very subjective. And in that case, I think the referee dropped the ball and should have stopped it way sooner.
Well, so we had three title fights, Ariella. One was unanimous decision. The other we all said should have been stopped a little earlier. And then you just brought up the subjectivity of not only the ref, but the judges. And that would bring us to Volkanovski and Holloway. That was a fight, a split decision for the champ to remain the champ, and many thought that Holloway was the winner in that one. Take us through what you thought there and how that decision went down.
Well, first of all, this was an immediate rematch, and historically, when the guy who was the champion going into the first fight goes into the second fight, when they run it right back, that guy doesn't fare well for whatever reason. I think historically, like, that guy is 2-8 in those 10 instances. In this case, Max Holloway looked phenomenal early on. I thought he won the first two rounds very clearly. He was relaxed. He had made some adjustments from their first fight because leg kicks were a big part of their first fight, and he was getting hit a little bit, but nearly not as much as the first time they fought back in December. So I thought, all right, Max is back. Like, this guy is he's figured it out. And so he won the first two rounds. And by the way, one of the big stories going into this fight was the fact that Max told me that he couldn't do any training. He had to do everything via Zoom. So he was even joking about it in the middle of the fight, and we were joking about it online. Like, hey, maybe Zoom training is the way to go because he looks amazing. Then third and fourth, Volkanovski figured it out, and I thought he won those two rounds. Not as clearly as the first and second for Max, but I thought he did enough to win those rounds, so we're going 2-2 into the fifth. And I thought Max won the fifth, and I was very surprised. But a lot of people – I got so much hate yesterday. Holy smokes, here I am trying to enjoy a nice little Sunday, finally a day off with my family. And people got so mad at me that I said it wasn't a robbery. And it's crazy to me that people are so hung up on that word. To me, when you have a fight that the first four rounds were pretty clear, two for Max, two for Volkanovski. And by the way, all three judges scored it the exact same. First two for Max, second two for, one and two for Max, and three and four for Volkanovski. Everyone agreed on that. And then it all comes down to a pretty close fifth round, and two judges gave it to Alex, and one gave it to Max. That's not a robbery. A robbery is when someone, you know, won all three clearly, and they give it to the other guy, or four of five, and they give it to the other guy. Here, it came down to one round. That's just a really, really close competitive fight at the end of the day. So at the end of the day, I thought Max won, but I'm not here crying bloody murder or anything like that. It's just a close fight, and again, judging. It's a problem in our sport because they use a boxing model to judge MMA fights. They use the 10-point must system, 10-9 for the winner of the fight. And there's just no real clear guidelines as to who won what. MMA, as you guys know, is a much different sport than boxing. You can kick, you can punch, you can knee, you can take someone down. And I don't feel like they take that into account in the judging. And that's why in these close rounds, and especially in these title fights, you're often going to see situations like this.
Follow him on Twitter at Ariel Helwani. Check out the Ariel Helwani MMA show. As always, my friend, we appreciate you joining us. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Mike Sr., you're the man. All the best to you. Thank you for everything.
Thanks, Ariel. Appreciate that very much. Really do.
Got to give the women, by the way, a little love, too. The two women's fights right on the main event, or the main card, were absolutely spectacular. So,
and I also agree with him about the robbery. This was last round, 1 point by, you know, one judge. You know, or the two judges going, you know, for the champ on that. So I agree. A robbery is when something is so far one way and it goes the other way.
I can say you mentioned those fights. That Thug Rose fight, her face after that to be on the winning side of things is a testament to this sport.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
What an absolute battle that was.
The Washington Redskins will officially change their nickname, as reported first by Sports Business Daily. The news comes 7 years after their owner, Dan Snyder, told USA Today he would never change the name. The new nickname is expected to be announced at a later date. Lakers guard Rajon Rondo suffered a broken right thumb at a team practice last night in Orlando. The 34-year-old is going to undergo surgery, and he'll be out 6 to 8 weeks. And because it was in the bubble where they were practicing, getting ready for the season to restart, they cannot replace him on the roster. Cole Custer outlasted Kevin Harvick and Martin Truex Jr. in the final lap of the Quaker State 400 at the Kentucky Speedway to earn his first NASCAR Cup Series victory. Custer became the first rookie regular to win in the Cup Series in nearly 4 years, and let's add to that, at 22 years old, is the youngest driver to win a Cup Series race on a mile-and-a-half track, surpassing the previous mark set by one Jeff Gordon in 1994. On this date, July 13, 2011, Abby Wambach's header in the 79th minute breaks a tie against France, and the United States earns its first trip to the Women's World Cup Final since winning it in 1999. The U.S. would go on to face Japan in the final, unfortunately losing in a penalty shootout after a 2-2 draw.
SportsCenter is brought to you by Nature Valley. Whether you're taking on your favorite lookout or lawn chair, sitting on your porch or in the park, Nature Valley Sweet and Salty Bars will help you make the most of your outdoor time. Enjoy a creamy, crunchy, sweet and salty bar wherever you are.
Skolnick and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and your smart speakers. Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo, sitting with Mike Golick and Mike Golick Jr. Brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Cover all your bases with Straight Talk Wireless. Get the same networks as big carriers, only pay up to 50% less. I'm trying to save you money here. Get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G, just $45 a month, only at Walmart. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. And gentlemen, let's head straight over to the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line to get some Straight Talk on all things Major League Baseball from ESPN baseball analyst Jessica Mendoza, who joins us now. Jess, thanks so much for the time. I've talked a lot to Buster only over the last couple of weeks. He doesn't seem to have a ton of confidence that baseball can get through the season unscathed. As we get closer to the season actually starting, how confident are you that they can pull this off?
You know, I think the priority is going to come to the postseason. And, Buster's right. I mean, the fact that I think 60 games will be played, you know, by each team getting to the postseason perfectly, I think that'd be a pipe dream. But I do think the priority for baseball, because realistically, that's where the money is. That's where the attention is going to be. That's where really the focus, getting to October any way possible. So there's been a lot of talk, like, will there even be a World Series crown? Will someone even get it? You know, I do think that will happen. The path to that point, I think, is going to be pretty interesting. But I do think we will have at least a World Series champion by the end of this. How that looks, I mean, nobody's going to know. It's going to get pretty crazy, I think.
Yeah, the complexion of this changes a lot. We've heard obviously one of the big announcements over the last week or so was Buster Posey being one of the players to opt out of this. We know there was some worry that other players might follow in this, but from the players that have come back and started training again, Jess, what has the reception there looked like and the return to actual play been like for these players in the early going?
Yeah, they're having fun. I mean, I saw Francisco Lindor. There's a ballpark cam. You know, no one's out there. It's empty. There's inner squad going. You had Mike Clevenger on the mound, and Francisco Lindor hits a home run. And as he's rounding third base, he does like a somersault cartwheel in the home. And I forgot who was behind the plate, just shaking his head. I mean, these guys are having fun. And when you look at just the game itself and them having that separation, how far they are from each other, I mean, just the natural safety, I feel like that baseball over almost any other sport has within it once they're out there. Now, what they're doing when they're away from the field, even, you know, within the clubhouse is where it can get a lot more questionable. But it's been kind of fun to just watch these guys play. And especially because it has this summer training feel, right? I mean, it's so just unusual. We're in July. But these guys, I mean, just like any of us, right? They just grabbed our bats and went out and played in the backyard. That's what it looks like right now, except, of course, they're hitting it like 400 feet.
But listen, you're right. For any athlete, once they get in their lines of the sport, it's their sport. And you're correct in saying it's outside of that when they go home and stuff, where that could probably have the ultimate negative effect on the game going forward, as we're talking to Jessica Mendoza here on Golic and Wingo. So I'm asking anybody who has had at a high, high level a bat in their hand or have thrown a ball, which you have done at a very high, high level, when we get back to the season starting on July 23rd, who has the advantage, the pitchers or the hitters?
Oh, the pitchers. Are you kidding me? I mean, first of all, I just look at the first game, Garrett Cole, Max Scherzer, and I'm just like, for any hitter, it's like, really? Okay, so I've been hitting in my backyard or some warehouse or whatever we've been doing, right, this entire time off the tee. Maybe I've got some pitchers throwing to me. Of course, there's these few weeks that, you know, you're seeing the inner squad, stuff like that. But I'm telling you what, it's so much easier for a pitcher to be able to do what they've been doing these last few months and have the advantage instead of getting in the batter's box. Now, throughout the season, you'll see that change, of course. But that first week, are you kidding me? Getting in that batter's box and ahead of all these guys, I feel like, especially when I was looking at the first matches, I'm like, I just feel like that is one of the hardest. I don't care who you've been facing, what you've been doing these last few months, it is clearly advantage pitcher.
Jess, so along those lines, would you expect the pitchers to not be able to last as long, though?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen expanded roster. I mean, that's what's happened. And I'm actually kind of bummed that the rosters are now going to go to 30 guys just because now we're going to see even more pitchers. And one of the things that drives me nuts about the game and slowing down is the pitching changes that continue to happen. And now, I mean, you're going to have five more pitches per team. It just, what's going to happen, I think, is that, of course, a lot of these guys are going to want to save, make sure that they're easing back in. So you could see being pulled in the fourth or fifth inning and then pitching change. You could see five or six guys in the back end of a game, back end starting now like the fifth or sixth inning, because it's such advantage pitcher. You can really manipulate and match up with the additional rosters now. So that to me is like, oh, man, like I just, you want to be able to really watch a guy go. And I just feel like now with only 60 games, my wish was that these pitchers could go, you know, 7-8 innings and you'd only see three or four pitchers a game.
ESPN baseball analyst Jessica Mendoza brought to you by Blue Emu. Pharmacist recommended Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief works fast and you won't stink. So, Jess, you're talking about a consolidated quick schedule, 60 games in very few days. When you look at that, what team do you think benefits the most from what they'll have to get through to get to the playoffs?
You know, I would have said Chicago White Sox until a couple days ago. Not that it completely changed, but I mean, that is a team still. You know, you look at especially a lot of their youth. I was really excited. The reason I say that changes is Michael Kopech has now decided to opt out for the season. And this was an arm, you guys, a young arm. A lot of people don't know who he is. Had Tommy John surgery, was going to miss the bulk of this season up until this point. And so you think, wow, like this is an opportunity for a guy to be able to come in, really boost a team that doesn't get a lot of love. And when you look at that middle division, when I say middle, I'm not even saying AL or NL, because these teams will be playing each other in that kind of central region of the country. It is by far, I feel like, the weakest part. And so the White Sox are a team, and I still believe, along with the Reds, that can surprise people. Of course, the Yankees, the Dodgers, all the big names are still going to make the waves that they're going to make. But I'm really bummed that Michael Kopech, I totally understand his reasoning for opting out, although I think it has a lot more to do with the fact that he's just not as comfortable coming back, rushing back from Tommy John surgery. And to be honest, expectation, people like me have been talking him up now for the last few weeks, saying, hey, the White Sox are going to be that team to watch because of him. And I think rightly, he's like, you know what, I think I'm going to take this year off and really be able to get my arm back to where it needs to be and not feel the pressure of, I got 60 games just coming back from Tommy John. I got to carry this team and kind of meet those hopes of everyone expecting this White Sox to make some waves.
Absolutely. And his pitching coach, Don Cooper, certainly expressed some concern. He is a guy who's dealt with some anxiety, some things in the past that they want to make sure he gets a handle on. And so I'm sure that team will wrap their arms around him, even though he is not a part of what's happening going forward. Jess, we see it so much in the sports world right now is taking a look at teams that have used Native American mascots and looking and wondering if change was coming. We've seen what's happening with the Washington football team in the NFL. We've certainly heard a statement from the Indians. The Braves came out and said they're not going to be making a name change. Did any part of that surprise you?
It surprised me that they were so adamant. I mean, I love what the Cleveland Indians did, and Terry Francona just a week ago talking about, I mean, his quote, Terry with the Indians said, you know, even at my age, you don't want to be too old to learn or realize that maybe I've been ignorant of some things. Be ashamed. Try to be better. And he talked about them being open to listening, because the most important thing right now is being willing to listen, not necessarily just talk. And so what we're seeing is, you know, a lot of people just saying, you know what, we might not make the decision today to make any kind of change or not, but we're willing to listen. So I was more, I think, surprised at the Braves that they were just adamant, like, heck no, we're not changing anything. Like, we are sticking with what we know. And I get it, it's a very controversial topic, but I'll tell you what really stood out to me was listening to the Indians. I feel like do it right. Whether, you know, they decide what they decide to do or not, I think the point is that they're saying things that, like, you know what, for a long time we've said no, and I think it's time now to listen.
Follow her on Twitter, at Jess Mendoza. Jessica, as always, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jess.
Golic and Wingo's brought to you by 303 Touchless Sealant. Don't have time to wax your car? 303 Touchless Sealant's a quick and easier solution. Simply spray on and rinse off. It's that easy. Get ultimate protection and shine in minutes that lasts up to 6 months. Now available at O'Reilly, AutoZone, and Advance Auto Parts. Visit 303radio.com for more info.
It's Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Sirius XM, Channel 80. And your smart speakers, Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo, sitting with Mike Golic Jr. And as we do every single Monday, it is that time, gentlemen, where we can start to take a look back at the weekend that we just had and try to figure out who gets the blue ribbon, was the champion of the weekend.
You know what's I mean, we've been doing this every Monday for a while now, and boy, it's kind of been nice getting to the Mondays and just having just sports things.
Having lots of options,
yeah,
because people played in one sports this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly took a horrific turn there for a while, and we're still kind of in that, obviously. But there's been more and more sports to talk about, and we're looking forward to even more and more happening. We keep talking about July being this month where it all gets going again, with MLS starting and NBA and baseball back in their respective camps and starting later this month. And we hope, you know, I guess we have our fingers crossed, you know, with college football and the NFL, but it's nice when we're putting up lists of potential winners for the weekend that it's actual athletes and actual sports to talk about. So it's nice if short-lived, let's hope not, but it's nice to get back to that.
It is, and we've seen some of the sports that we mentioned early on in this, like all the sports that we felt had natural social distancing qualities to them have been the ones that have not only been able to come back, but as everyone's talked about, stay back here, right? Like, we've seen NASCAR be able to put together a strong slate of races so far in all of this. Golf has multiple tournaments under its belt, and both have weathered storms of some positive tests in here and how to work around that, and gotten us to a point now where we get to string multiple of these together. So Colin Morikawa won in golf this weekend. Young guy this weekend, Justin Thomas, those two went into a playoff.
Well,
there,
and the thing about it is, Morikawa was down three with three to go, and they end up in a playoff, and he wins on the third hole. Justin Thomas just got to be kicking himself. Had a couple of 10-footers for wins a couple of two times that he couldn't hit. So Morikawa just hanging in there and then getting the win. And Custer, as I've been mentioning on every sports center, 22 years old, youngest on a mile-and-a-half track Jeff Gordon, yeah, 94. So, I mean, what some of the youngsters are doing.
I was going to say, Cole Custer pulling that off, obviously that was one that, surprise, Kevin Harvick had a very real chance of winning down the stretch. a lot of frustration from Kyle Busch in the way his car was running in that one. Pulled himself out of one of the, like, cooler-looking tail slides I had seen right by the wall, somehow able to correct course in that in a way that I thought for sure was going to end in a wreck. So, another exciting finish there. You had guys going 3 and 4 wide at times there. It was something to watch, but youth ends up being the story in the weekend.
If you renamed this to who almost won the weekend, I feel like Harvick would be the winner of 2020, because the number of times, you're right, it feels like
it's been him and Denny Hamlin. Like a neck and neck at the end of every race.
The one weekend it was in the Poconos, right, where it's back-to-back days, they were 1-2 and flipped it the other day. I mean, it's been ridiculous what they've done. So a lot out there. Anybody from UFC, you know, in winning there, Carol Austin, who we'll have on tomorrow. I mean, incredible career of her own in basketball. Then she was an assistant coach with the Boston Celtics. We've seen more and more women getting a chance as assistants in the NBA. She's a new head women's basketball coach at Duke. But you know there's going to be a women's coach in the NBA at some point, you know, down the road, you know. And you know, she's such a huge name, you know, so let's see, you know, at Duke being a head coach now for the first time and taking over there and where she can take that program and continue.
Now, the second, because remember Neil Ivey, who took over at Notre Dame, had been working with the Memphis Grizzlies in the season prior to that before going back and taking, I mean, two very prominent jobs on the women's side in college basketball. But it's been nice to see, like, those are well-respected basketball minds for everyone. Like, their careers have been so unbelievably prolific that you see the outpouring of congratulations from players on the Celtics who had been impacted by Kara Lawson's coaching there. You saw it from Ja Morant and others with the Grizzlies when Yale took that job. So, awesome stuff. We're all excited for Kara here.
It's certainly not the first we mentioned. Becky Hamm has been a name that's been talked about forever.
But I do think there's some significance to some of these high-profile assistant coaches going to high-profile gigs to be head coaches. I feel like they're stopping where they are to have great head coaching opportunities, but they still have a trajectory that ends up in the NBA. My who won the weekend is a little off the beaten path, but follow me here. It's UFC. I still think Masvidal won the weekend, even though we lost the fight.
Really?
In the process of losing the fight, it feels like the general society has apologized for why he even had to take the fight in the first place. He's gained some benefit of the doubt that if he had more time to train, his post-game interview, like Ariel referenced, has over a million views. He's going to get an immediate rematch out of this, like, or at least, I'd say, quickly get the opportunity for this fight again. Somehow he managed to lose and stay unscathed. Like, that's a win to me, as strange as that sounds.
And I think we went into it kind of knowing there was no way for him to lose in all of this. Foot stomping gets a big win on the weekend with Kamaru Usman in this, who continues to actually be the champion.
Right, yeah.
And it sounds like Gilbert Burns, that's the fight a lot of people think stylistically might be a good matchup. But make no mistake, the winner of this weekend was cake. Everything's cake. Everything, if you look around and cut it open, it is all cake.
To me, every cake wins every weekend. So I'll split it with the two youngsters, Colin Morikawa and Cole Custer, winning in PGA and NASCAR, respectively.
Are you allowed to do that? Have two winners?
Is my name on the show?
Your name's on the show. So, coming up
at
tomorrow.
At least for a while longer, okay?
Kara Lawson, Mark Slare, Dan Orlovsky on the show that has his name on it. Coming up tomorrow. Go look and wingo.